VOA News, I'm Gene Randall. The Taliban today staged a large-scale pre-dawn attack on the northern city of Kunduz, even as leaders of the insurgent group were engaged in ongoing talks with the United States on ending the Afghan war. The assault came from several directions, triggering intense gun battles with government forces. Both sides reportedly suffered casualties, and civilians have also been hurt, though details on losses are so far hard to come by. The scene in Hong Kong today was a familiar one as police fired tear gas at pro-democracy protesters. Authorities have refused permission for today's rally in China's semi-autonomous territory after last week's violent clashes, but demonstrators were out in force. Some threw petrol bombs at police and set fires in the streets. We have a report from AP correspondent Karen Shamus on the decision to defy a ban.
Protesters took to the streets, ignoring a police ban against the march to mark the fifth anniversary of China's decision against fully democratic elections in Hong Kong. A large crowd of protesters wearing helmets and gas masks gathered outside the city government building. Police fired tear gas from the other side of the barriers, then brought out a water cannon truck that fired regular water and then coloured water at the protesters, staining them and nearby journalists. Businessman Jimmy Lay said Hong Kong citizens had to keep fighting for their rights.
The Hong Kong situation is getting tense here, but we have to go on.
I'm Karen Chemas.
A Sudanese judge today formally indicted the deposed president of Sudan, Omar al-Bashir, on charges of corruption and the illegal possession of foreign currency. According to Reuters, al-Bashir told the court in Khartoum he had received $25 million from Saudi Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman, but that he had not used the money for private purposes. To stay up to date on all the day's news, you can visit our website, voanews.com. From Washington, this is VOA News. The U.S. National Hurricane Center says Dorian has strengthened and that the Category 4 storm is extremely dangerous. U.S. President Donald Trump says he is monitoring the situation.
Hurricane is roaring and it could be a big one. We're hoping that it maybe makes a right and goes up north, but that's about a 5% chance. It's not looking good.
National Hurricane Center Director Ken Graham said the storm is moving slowly, and he says that is not good.
The longer you keep this around, the more rain that we get, the more time you had this onshore flow to push the water in. And it's also a situation that you keep the wind, and that's more rain. So if you have all that wind over all that rain, and you saturate the soil, that means trees down. We have more time for the damage.
Florida Governor Ron DeSantis says even if his state does not take a direct hit, and there are signs that will be the case, there will still be tough times ahead.
There is a 50 to 70% chance and probability of tropical storm force winds, along with possible storm surges. So again, let's prepare, let's wait, and let's see. Don't take down your shutters, not just yet.
It is beginning to look as if Dorian will make landfall in the state of Georgia, Florida's northern neighbor. In Britain, there is a sustained political barrage aimed at Prime Minister Boris Johnson and his plan to curtail further debate on leaving the European Union without any Brexit deal in place. Opposition leader Jeremy Corbyn is chief among Johnson's critics.
We will be taking action immediately to do everything we can to get Parliament to declare what it's already done twice, which is its opposition to a no-deal Brexit, and do everything we can to get a measure through Parliament to stop the government taking us out without a deal.
About 2 million people living in India's northeastern state of Assam face the prospect of becoming stateless. This with the wind-up of a mammoth government effort to identify illegal immigrants. Their names do not appear on a citizen's register published today. Human rights activists say this could add up to the largest number of people ever effectively stripped of their citizenship. The state government has said there will be an opportunity to prove Indian citizenship before tribunals. But observers say many people will find it difficult to navigate the legal process as they are poor and marginalized. Ford is recalling more than 500,000 trucks and SUVs in North America because seatbacks might not properly restrain people in a crash. The car company says the vehicles might be missing a part needed for seat strength, increasing the risk of injury in an accident. Ford says dealers would inspect seat structures and replace them if necessary. Owners will be notified at the beginning of October. The company says it knows of no injuries connected to the suspected defect. More news at voanews.com. Gene Randall, VOA News.
morning and welcome to Nightline Africa. We are coming to you live from the English service of The Voice of America. Thanks for joining us. I'm Peter Clotty in Washington.
We have noticed with regret that 50% that was meant for investing in projects that would improve the life of the common man was embezzled, and that is what we are investigating. Additionally, we also believe that the money spent on the market did not do the work. We believe only a minute fraction was spent for improving this market.
The Sierra Leonean Anti-Corruption Commission investigates the misappropriation of $11 million of donor funds.
He was complaining about sickness still in the legs. He cannot work properly. But 1 week before today, he was seriously sick and he could not even work properly. The only thing we are looking for is to have a clear medical attention of Eric and to know what he's seeking for, which disease he's seeking, so that the proper medication should be done to him.
A lawyer seeks medical attention for Tanzanian investigative journalist Eric Kabandera.
Wherever we've gone, people have received us with open arms, and we are drawing the biggest political rally crowd ever in the history of Botswana. So we're very, very confident that our election strategy will deliver us the results that we are looking for.
And a leader of the newly formed Botswana opposition party plans to work hard to ensure President Mokgweetsi Masisi loses the upcoming polls. Those stories and more coming up on Nightline Africa. The Sierra Leonean Anti-Corruption Commission has granted the Chief of Staff of former President Ernest Bai Koroma bail following his arrest Friday. The anti-graft agency detained Dr. Richard Conte over allegations of corruption. He is accused of misappropriating funds estimated to be $11 million donated by the Japanese government for a project to help improve the living conditions of Sierra Leoneans. Alhassan Kagbo, Deputy Director for Public Education and Outreach for the anti-graft agency, tells me investigations are still ongoing to determine all those involved in the alleged financial malfeasance.
In 2009, the government of Japan, through JICA, which is Japan International Cooperation Agency, decided to help Sierra Leone. They gave us a tanker of oil that amounts to $11 million, with the understanding that the government of Sierra Leone will sell this oil and then invest the proceeds in projects that would improve the life of the ordinary man. The agreement was 50% of the $11 million was to be spent on building markets and then improving existing markets, transforming them into ultra-modern market. And they also had the option to invest the 50% in any project the government deems necessary. Now, we have noticed with regret that the 50% that was meant for investing in projects that would improve the life of the common man was embezzled, and that is what we are investigating. Additionally, we also believe that the money spent on the market did not do the work. We believe only a minute fraction was spent for improving this market.
So apart from him being investigated, what other issues concerning this $11 million gift that the Japanese government gave to the people of Sierra Leone, or the government of Sierra Leone, is the anti-graft organization looking at?
The monies were meant for purpose. The second part of the money, the Japanese government gave the Sierra Leonean government an option to use the monies where they want to use these monies without accounting on a daily basis to the Japanese government. The other 50% that we are meant to account on a daily basis. Now, when the Japanese government contacted our government to give updates on what has been going on, what they received was nothing to go by. So we, as a country and as a people, we are determined, especially the commission, to ensure that money is meant for the benefit of Sierra Leoneans are properly spent. So we'll continue to investigate this issue and any other issue that is related to this, and then we'll take the appropriate action when the investigations are concluded.
Does that mean that the Anti-Corruption Commission wants to recoup the money, look at how the money was spent, and perhaps punish alleged perpetrators if funds were embezzled or misappropriated?
Correct.
Opposition parties are saying that it appears that the Anti-Corruption Commission is targeting and persecuting officials of the immediate past administration of former President Ernest Bai Koroma. How do you respond to that?
The Anti-Corruption Commission is influenced by one thing and only one thing, the evidence before us. We are not interested in politics. We do not take instructions from anyone. We take instructions from the law. We look at the allegations against you. We look at the evidence before us and then make a determination with respect to whether there is sufficient evidence to prosecute or not to prosecute. All other considerations do not affect us at all.
Does that mean that the Anti-Corruption Commission has evidence of misappropriation or embezzlement of funds regarding this gift given by the Japanese government to the Republic of Sierra Leone?
We are alleging misappropriation of public and donor funds, and that is what we are investigating.
After granting him bail, what's the next line of action?
The investigation will continue, and then if we have sufficient evidence to show that he has a case to answer, then we can charge the matter to court, like any other law enforcement agency.
Now, with regards to this particular investigation, are other people being looked at since he was not perhaps the only person who oversaw this gift by the Japanese government?
Oh, certainly, certainly. We are looking at other people, but then because he was a minister and he's high profile, of course his arrest and detention would make news. But it's not the only person we are looking at. And we've been very careful in this investigation. And then I can assure you that the only thing that is important to us in this investigation is the evidence before us. And anyone that is involved, anyone that we think has a hand in this, will certainly answer to the law.
Alhassan Kagbo is the Deputy Director for Public Education and Outreach for the Sierra Leonean Anti-Corruption Commission. He spoke with me from the capital, Freetown. A lawyer for Tanzanian investigative journalist Eric Kabandera on Friday asked that he get a speedy trial and medical attention after more than 4 weeks of incarceration. Appearing with Kabandera at a hearing in Magistrates Court in Dar es Salaam, attorney Jebra Kamboli asked that the journalist's case be resolved quickly. Kabandera was arrested and charged with involvement in organized crime, money laundering and tax evasion. Kamboli told me that he asked prison authorities to allow the journalist to be taken to a state hospital for treatment of respiratory and leg problems that have developed during his incarceration.
The last time we sit and talk, it was 2 days before today, and actually he was complaining about sickness still in the legs. He cannot work properly. But 1 week before today, he was seriously sick and he could not even walk properly. So the only thing we are looking for is to have a clear medical attention of Eric and to know what he's seeking for, which disease he's seeking, so that the proper medication should be done to him. Because even the relatives and lawyers, we don't know actually what's the problem behind the sickness.
Have you asked the authorities who are holding him to attend to him medically?
Yes, we did our best with the prisoners, especially prison medical doctors, to make sure that he get the attention he deserves. But the first day when he was seriously sick, he had to sleep all overnight to wait until the morning when he gets some medication. So we find that actually it's not proper. And for them, they don't have enough facilities for making a proper medication and a proper treatment to Eric. And according to his symptoms, we think that it's proper for him to get a better medical treatment and their medical attention.
Are his family members allowed to see him? Because you said you last saw him 2 days ago. How frequent can you see him, and how frequent can his family members see him as well?
For the lawyers, you can see him as you wish, according to your timetable, except weekends. But for the relatives and family, they can only sit and talk to him 2 days per week, which is weekend only, Saturday and Sunday. That's the only way where the family can meet and talk to him.
Are you still maintaining your stance that charges against your client, Eric Kabandera, are politically motivated? And why do you say so?
Firstly, what I can say is the offense which he was alleged to have committed when he was arrested, it is not the same offense which he was interrogated. And finally, it was not the same offense which Eric was charged before the court of law. So it means that From the time he was arrested, interrogated, and later on charged, it seems that the intention was to charge him other offenses, especially seditious offenses. But later on, they found that they were looking, they were fishing expeditions of which offense Eric could have committed, possible any offense. So that's why I was saying that when he was arrested for other offenses, which he was not interrogated, nor was not charged against those offenses. So we find that there was no actually clear at the time of arrest which offense Eric was committed. So I find that the way he was treated, it seems that there is other reasons apart from normal charges.
Have they provided evidence to prove the charges against him? Have you seen the proof or evidence of the charges against your client?
No, not yet, because they're saying that they are still investigating the offense. But we find that it's not one time since he was arrested, and the government is saying they are still investigating. So we don't know what they're investigating, because they've already took everything they want.
Is it normal for a suspect to be arrested and for investigations to continue in the legal process in Tanzania? Is this normal?
According to the type of the offense and according to the laws we have, Eric has been charged with offenses which are unbailable, which do not have any time limit of investigation. The government, they can investigate as long as they can on the type of the offense. Though we still maintain that this is not a good position or this is not a good law to implement in our country, in a democratic country.
Does that mean that as long as they are investigating, they can still hold him perhaps 5, 6, or 10 years while investigations continue? Is that what you suspect could happen here?
It has happened to other colleagues, to other people of the same offense. And some may stay even for 8 years. So I find that Eric could still remain more years in custody if things remain as they are.
So currently, what is next for Eric Kabandera in the legal process in Tanzania? What is next now?
We're still pushing the government to make sure that they make investigation on time, that they can handle their cases, they believe they have clear and genuine charges against Eric. So we're still pushing from the side of making sure that they investigate the case on time.
Jebra Kambole is the defense attorney for detained Tanzanian investigative journalist Eric Kabandera. He spoke with me from the commercial capital, Dar es Salaam. Biggie Butali, the newly elected leader of the recently formed opposition Botswana Patriotic Front, or BPF, says his party is ready to join forces with other opposition groups to wrestle power from President Mokgweetsi Masisi. His remarks came after the president officially issued writs Friday, ordering the Independent Electoral Commission to organize polls on October 23. This, despite earlier fears expressed by former President Seretse Khama Iyankama that the elections will be postponed. To learn more about the prospects of the opposition group despite the dominance of the governing party since independence, I reached Biggie Butali in the Botswana capital, Habaroni.
My party is very much prepared for the October elections. We are going to be fielding 18 members of parliament out of a parliament of 57. And we've already started launching these candidates in their respective constituencies. Wherever we've gone, people have received us with open arms, and we are drawing the biggest political rally crowds ever in the history of Botswana. So we're very, very confident that our election strategy will deliver us the results that we are looking for.
Ruling party supporters are telling me that your chances of success are negligible because of the dominance of the party since independence, and are saying that the opposition, although you are trying to come up with an alliance, it is still disunited and fractured, that the ruling party will take advantage of that, and that the BDP is going to win the election come what may, and that President Mokgweetsi Masisi will be the president of the country.
On the contrary, the ruling party is the one that is fragmented and has never been this fragmented in its 55-plus years of existence. What we are witnessing now is that they are firing their prospective members of parliament, 2 months before the election. We have one of the members of parliament called Moswani, in one of the constituencies up north. He has been hauled before a disciplinary hearing, and another BDP candidate has been brought before a disciplinary hearing. And they're doing this within weeks of the general election. So they are the ones that are in total disarray, and this has never happened before. And again, you must not discount the fact that former President Ian Khama is a patron of our party, and he is paramount chief of the biggest region in Botswana that has 19 seats now. And of those 19, the ruling party is holding 18. And I can tell you, come October, it's going to be reversed. They will have, at the best, one seat, and the other 18 are going to be taken by the opposition.
BDP supporters are saying that you are over-relying on the former president, who appears to have fallen out with President Mokhweetsi Masisi, and that because he had wanted to control him, President Masisi appeared to be his own man. That is why he has left the party to be basically a top advisor and supporter of your party, and that all these plans to thwart his election will be not, and that Mokhweetsi Masisi would be voted for by the people of Botswana, or Matwana, as they call them. Your take on that?
What I can assure you is that when President Masisi came into power, he misunderstood power and how it is exercised. That is why under him, you've had over six members of his party being expelled, suspended, sitting members of parliament, one. Secondly, President Masisi miscalculated the power of former President Khama. Right now, at every rally that President Masisi holds, he is begging the former president to come back to his party. If his influence is so insignificant, why is he begging at every single rally? And this is not bearing any fruit. On the contrary, it is caricaturing him, and people are just laughing at this comedy of comedies.
So you, as a presidential candidate for your party, what happened to the opposition alliance you spoke to me about some time ago, that you will present a united front which will give you a significant weight to challenge for the presidency in Botswana?
Indeed, we are going to present a united front come October. And what I can assure you is that in the coming days, in the coming weeks, you are going to see us holding joint rallies. You are going to see us targeting certain constituencies for certain parties. And as I've promised you in our last interview, come October, you're going to have the first change of government in the history of Botswana. It is a promise that I again reaffirm today. It is a promise that you will see. And please do come to the inauguration and shake my hand on that day.
Biggie Butale is the leader of the recently formed opposition Botswana Patriotic Front. He spoke with me from the capital, Habaroni. The chairperson for the Zambian Non-Governmental Organization Registration Board has threatened to deregister civil society groups that fail to uphold rules and guidelines governing the organizations. Chanda Nundi said it is illegal for the groups to impose their views on citizens instead of educating Zambians to make up their own mind on the prevailing constitutional amendment issues. Chanda Nundi tells me the civil society groups should ensure they solely focus on providing civic education to Zambians in order to maintain their status as legally registered civil society organizations or NGOs.
What we begin to see now is that in this process of amending the constitution should actually be owned by Zambians. It is important that Zambians own the process by giving them more balanced views and let them decide. But unfortunately, there are some NGO leaders who are actually, you know, like forcing people to believe in a position that they feel is correct. And that's where we have a problem. So I'm saying the best is for civil society leaders to go out and offer civic education. Give civic education to the people of Zambia and let the people make informed decisions based on the information that you have given them. And I actually also encourage them to say the process of giving civic education to the people of Zambia must not only wake up when there's a constitution amendment process or there's anything of that nature. It should be a continuous process so that our people are enlightened.
Well, some civil society organizations are saying that your statement basically is an affront on Article 20 of the Constitution, which guarantees their operation in the country. How do you respond to that?
Yes, the statement, of course, is anchored on the 2009 NGO Act. And I know that they are quoting the Constitution because that protects them as well as citizens. But that does not mean that NGO leaders should not follow the act under which they are registered. So it's important that they do the correct thing, because we will take the law as it is, as the NGO registration board, and we will simply do what is right, not to intimidate anybody, not to put pressure on anybody, but to ensure that we do the correct thing for the benefit of the Zambian people.
Well, they are also saying that you don't have the power to deregister them as you have threatened, and that because they are educating Zambians to know their rights and responsibilities in this political democratic dispensation, you are threatening them and that you don't have the power to do so. What is your response?
Well, as an individual, they are right. No individual has the power to do that. But I think the act itself gives the board power to deregister and the cancel or even suspend. As a board, we stand in for the government of the Republic of Zambia, and a registration certificate given to you is still the property of the Republic of Zambia. The fact that you have it doesn't mean it's your property.
Some of them are saying that your threats are politically motivated because they are conscientizing and educating Zambians so that they would demand their rights under this political dispensation, and that them doing so appears to be a threat or has ruffled the feathers of the powers that be upon which you are issuing such a threat. How do you respond to that?
Okay. Yes, they can say they look like they are politically motivated, because you also understand that the Constitution Amendment, let's say, is a process that in which politicians also have a lot of interest, because they are not agreeing with the number of things that politicians are proposing. Somewhere, somehow, when you come in to caution, you'll be looked at as someone maybe who is fighting politically, but that's not true. And actually, the encouragement has been that they should offer civic education. That is the basis. That's the basis. Civic education must be offered. But when we see this NGO leader begin to give their position to the Zambian people to say this is the right way to go, I think there now it becomes a problem.
Chanda Nonde is the chairperson for the Zambian Non-Governmental Organizations Registration Board. He spoke with me from the capital, Lusaka.
VOA brings you the best in African music on the African Beat. African Beat showcases the latest and the greatest of contemporary African music, from bobo music to hip life, bongo flavor to soukous, Afrobeat to ndombolo and makossa to kwaito. The African Beat on VOA has it all. And it's happening right here, Mondays through Fridays at 09:05 and 20:05 UTC, right after the international news. Thank you.
You are listening to Nightline Africa on the English service of The Voice of America. I'm your host, Peter Clotte, in Washington, D.C. Coming up in the second half of Nightline Africa, the Saturday music spot from our collection of music from the continent. But first, the spokesperson for the main opposition Malawi Congress Party says the government is to blame for the ongoing civil unrest, which has led to a series of demonstrations across the country. Maurice Muntali maintains that demands for the resignation of the chairperson of the Electoral Commission is legitimate. Maurice Muntali tells me the MCP says supporters of the ruling party contribute to the ongoing political crisis facing the country by allegedly attacking opponents with dissenting views, an accusation the government sharply denies.
We have no doubt at all that the DPP is only wanting to play the blame game. Otherwise, they have the worst and most notorious cadets in this region of Africa. They are the ones who are behind all the atrocities that you can tell in this country. They are wanting to hide behind the blame game so that whenever they terrorize civilians in this country, they will want to paint a picture that it is Malawi Congress Party that is behind those atrocities. We are talking of mediocrity because the elections were poorly conducted. And the one who chaired over all this electoral mess is Jane Ansah. That is mediocrity. But we're also talking of mediocrity where the government, the so-called government, is clueless and they do not want to usher Malawi into a nation that is ready to prosper.
But there are concerns by supporters of the DPP that you are trying to use the ongoing protests organized by the Human Rights Defenders Forum and other opposition groups to topple President Arthur Peter Mutharika's government. And this is the plan all along. Is this what the MCP is doing, using civil unrest and the ongoing demonstrations organized by the Human Rights Defenders Forum?
There is nobody in Malawi Congress Party who would like to topple this government or change any regime at all. Nobody. But what is going to be very bad for Malawians is when the people's demands are not met and their cries are not listened to. If nobody is noticing that Malawians are crying because their vote was rigged and their choice was denied, then let DPP not think that Malawians are going to sit down. Nobody is going to topple that government. If anything, those who toppled this government are the ones that rigged the vote. Because as far as we are concerned, the DPP are leading this country fraudulently. So there is nothing like that from Malawi Congress Party. If anything, the DPP is chasing their own shadow.
But the question then becomes, if you are in court, then why are you supporting the constant protests? In some cases, plans to protest at the airport and border port and some sensitive government institutions, which could create instability. And this is why supporters of the DPP and some concerned Malawians are saying that the MCP is trying to, by force, get into government using all kinds of tactics.
Malawians are wondering why it is so difficult for one Jane Ansah to resign after having presided over Mese elections and then let there be peace in this country. One can only speculate that there is something so hidden to all Malawians that Peter Mutharika and Jane Ansah know. So there is nothing like sinister plan from the part of Malawi Congress Party. The sinister plan is where you rig a vote and you refuse to resign and you don't want to listen to the demands of the citizenry. That is a crime and that is a sinister plan for the Malawi nation.
Maurice Muntali is the spokesperson for the main opposition Malawi Congress Party. He spoke with me from the capital, Lilongwe.
Right now it's time for music from our African collection, and you are hearing from Daniel Amachidede. Well, he was born Daniel Amachidede in Agogo, a town in the Asante Akim North Municipal District of the Ashanti region of Ghana. Amachidede is a prolific Ghanaian highlife musician currently on a U.S. tour. He is also a newly installed sub-chief at Agogo in the Asante Akim traditional area. His teaming fans call him Abrantie, or young man, iron boy, among others. Daniel Amachidede joins me live in the studios here in Washington, D.C., and we'll be right back after this music. I have with me live in the studio Amachidede. He is joined by Stephen Ohene Ejepong, as well as musician and actor Kojo Nkanza, otherwise known as Lillian Wynn. Guys, welcome to Voice of America.
Thank you.
Wonderful.
Thank
you. So Amachi, let me come to you. You are on a U.S. tour. You are here in Washington, D.C. You are playing tomorrow here in Northeast Washington, D.C. Tell me about what people should expect from your performance tomorrow.
Thank you. Well, I think this is not my first time in D.C. here. I've been here since my first show was 1990.
Okay.
Yeah. So I think this is my third time.
All right.
In D.C. Mm-hmm. So I'm expecting people to come and see the different Amachidede on stage tomorrow.
So you're going to give them something new?
Something different.
Is that right?
No, they know me, but tomorrow they are going to see me in a different way.
Is it going to be serious?
It's going to be serious.
Wonderful. Let me come to you, Lillian Wynn. You are part of the tour. Talk to me about the expectations of people tomorrow.
You are?
No, it's English. English. Strictly English, please.
Are you sure? My English is not too good far.
Please go ahead.
But this is my first time in D.C. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm a comedian. And a musician too.
And an actor.
A support man, my grandfather, the legend, Amachidede. Mm-hmm. We came here to support our legend.
Right.
But tomorrow, fire be fire, I swear. We do more things, comedy and the sing and the dance. So I'm going to miss some.
You will miss it.
Tomorrow, pay me back. Just say, and you're going to miss some. We'll be surprised.
Well, I'm coming to you, Amachi.
Yeah.
Over the years, you've been able to maintain and come up with hits. But looking at your U.S. tour tomorrow, what will be different? You talk about your fans should expect something different, something serious. What will be different?
Well, you see, they know how Amachi today always display himself on the stage.
Mm-hmm.
But they will see something different tomorrow, because what Amachi Dede is coming to do tomorrow is not the old Amachi Dede they know.
Mm-hmm.
Because maybe if they give me time, I can, I mean, be on stage for more than 4 hours for them tomorrow.
Let me come to you, Steven. Sure. Where will this venue be, and when does it begin, the time?
Okay, so the show begins at 10 p.m., and then the venue is at a Kama nightclub in D.C.
Where is it specifically? What's the address?
Okay, so the address is 2221 Adams Place, Northeast, Washington, D.C., and the zip code is 20018.
But so far, what has been the enthusiasm since this U.S. tour began, particularly here in the DMV, or specifically the D.C. area?
Okay, I would say the D.C. area, the response we are getting is like, it's really like, you know, interesting. And it's, mm-hmm. We appreciate their support and all that, and I believe everybody's going to come out and support the legend himself. As the legend came to your city, you can't, you know, miss that. Mm-hmm. So you just have to go online to go get your ticket, or you can get a ticket at the door. Yeah, and we have some particular, we have some vendors who also have some of the ticket out there for sale.
Mm.
Yeah, so if you go to, so if you live in Alexandria, you can go to the BM Boutique Alexandria. If you live in Woodbridge, you can go to the Kumasi Market. And if you live in around like close to, let's say, Stafford, you can go to the Brick Gardens as well. And you can call 2G's Entertainment and get some ticket too.
All right, so so we take a quick break. We go to the next song. This is Ododa Baby, as Amachi Dede just told me. We'll go back to the music, and we come back for some more.
Baby, I'm coming.
All right, Daniel Amachidede, Lil Wayne, and Stephen Ohini Ejepona, right with me here live on Nightline Africa. So, Amachi, let me come to you. How did music begin for you? Where did it start? Which band did you play in? When did you know that you were going to start music professionally?
Well, thank you. You see, I started playing music as far back as 1973.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I completed my elementary school in 1972. Mm. So we formed the Apollo High Kings at Agogo. There was a band called Bohem Stars.
Okay.
They are the one who recorded this song.
I remember.
Yeah, you remember this song, yeah.
Right.
So, the band was from Agogo.
Mm-hmm.
So, we started the Apollo Hikings at Agogo. So, when we started the Apollo Hikings, some of the guys I was playing with, stopped the band and joined, some joined Nanam Perdu, some joined City Boys. So it left with me and some few guys. So I also, went to Akwesi Ampo for Jamie, so rest in peace.
So what motivated you to go there and what did you learn from an equal legend at that time?
You see, my plan was to join Nana Ampadu. But when I reached Kumasi, I decided I should go to Asante Mampon and join Akwesi Ampo for Jamie. Why? Because that time there was Osei Kofi, there was Nadaba Mwakun, there were so many singers with Nanam Perdu. And I was not about to go and be the last person to.
Right.
You see, so I went to Asante Mampon to join Akwesi Ampofoje.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So when I joined Ampofoje, it was it took me about 3 months. Then I wrote this song, Wang Wami Ami Mutiu.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Then.
So did you take any lessons from him about how to compose music, and how did you begin? Because I also understand that you traveled to Nigeria, you worked in Nigeria for some time, and you released some songs in Nigeria. Talk to me about it.
Okay, well, you see, when I went to Pofuaje, I was already a composer.
Mm-hmm.
You see, so when the first day I reached Asante Mampon, you see, that time, the guy who was singing with him has already stopped the band. So they were at home. So finding somebody to back Akwesi Ampofoje. So when I get there, he tried me with some of his songs and I did everything. I sang all of them to him and he gave me chance.
All right.
So I started with him in 1974. So I played with Akwesi Ampofoje for 5 years. So 1979, I stopped the band, Kumapin Raj band, and then went to Nigeria.
What motivated you to go to Nigeria?
You see, it was in mind to, do my own recording.
Mm-hmm.
So, and that time too, Ghana was so tight that the studio wasn't good, and even to get a producer too wasn't easy. So I decided to go to Nigeria. So when I reached Nigeria, one day I was going to, support some guy to record his song. So a certain man who was at the studio that time heard my voice and he called me, that, my friend, you have a good voice. Can you record for me? And I said, why not? It's because of recording that I'm here.
Mm-hmm.
So he told me to, go and do a demonstration cassette for him. So I did it and then sent it to him. He played it, and he was so happy. Then he booked a studio for me, and then I do my recordings. The first recording became very hit in Nigeria. That was Jerosi Goshim.
Right.
Then To Be a Man, Awa.
Right.
In fact,
so you took the Nigerian pidgin English, so to speak, and released the album there? Because I remember in the 80s, those songs were very big in Ghana as well.
Yes, yes, yes. So big. So I became very popular in Nigeria. So I formed the Apollo Hikings right there again, and we're playing as a residence band at a hotel called Festac Hotel in Onitsha.
Onitsha?
Onitsha.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
All right, so let me ask you, are you doing any new songs now? Because the last time I heard, one of the people that helped you with, you know, your music passed away, so it slowed you down a little bit. Is that true?
Oh, well, that was my manager, my manager. The guy who was managing me at that time, he got an accident.
Yeah.
So, in fact, he couldn't
survive.
So,
may his soul rest in peace. But are you working on any new music now?
Oh, yeah. As I'm speaking to you, I'm planning to do a music with Sarkodie.
All right, the rapper or the hip-hop artist?
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
And when do you expect to release it?
Oh, well, we have not started, I mean, the studio works. So maybe we can finish it by the end of the year.
Lil Wayne, let me come to you. You came up with a song recently, Ladder.
Ladder and the Man Was Papa.
Okay.
And the more songs. Yeah.
So how, where does the motivation come from for you to come up with such music?
Okay, my professional is an actor.
I know you're an actor comedian. And a comedian too.
But the song is the part of the man moving side.
Okay.
Because I like dance, and people love my dance. That's why I try to do music for the to join the movie.
But this Ladder thing became a hit in Ghana.
Oh yeah, of course. I have more songs to hit.
So when are you releasing those songs?
I have a Ladder, Mobos Papa, Meyale, Achirasem, I Don't Think Far, Me and Samini, Kwetikum, more songs.
What does I Don't Think Far mean? Because every now and then you hear Ghanaians say, I can't think far.
Yeah.
What does it mean?
I use for the moving. I'll shoot the moving. I create the term. I can't think far. I don't take madness. The term be hate in Ghana, in the whole Africa.
Mm.
That's why I use the term to do song. I don't think far. I don't take madness. And no, I mean tears here.
All right. So we'll take a quick break for the music, and then we'll come back and call it, call the show a day. Continuing our conversation with Lil Wayne, Kojo Nkansa, Stephen Ohene Ejepon, as well as Amachi Dede, the legendary Ghanaian highlife musician. So, Amachi, you just told me that this is your favorite music. You call it a friend that wishes me ill, or Onyanku Pemiseye.
Oh, all right.
So talk to me. What makes it your favorite? Because you've had so many hits.
Oh, well, you see, this song, if you listen to it well, very well, and you understand the lyrics, you will love it. Because you see, you can see somebody who may need help, whom you can give everything, you can do everything to him just to help. Then later, when he gets some place to, stand, he begin to,
mistreat you, backstab you.
Good.
Okay.
Backsliding, then talking some maybe unnecessary things about you. You see? So in fact, that's the reason why I sat down and then wrote this music.
Is it because it happened to you, or it happened to somebody, or something that you witnessed? The motivation behind this.
This is something which happens to everybody. It can happen to me. It can happen to you. It can happen to everybody. And it do. It happens to everybody.
Right.
Yeah.
So what was the message that you want to pass on to people? Is it to caution people not to engage in such act, since you said it happens to everybody?
Oh yeah. My advice to everybody is that not every human being appreciate what somebody will do for him. So sometimes you do something good to somebody, waiting that maybe so that person will appreciate what you've done for him, and later and you hear some bad things about him talking against you which are not true. You see, such kind of things is not good. So my advice to everybody is that we should stop all these kind of things.
All right, before we leave, what is your message to your fans who will be coming to see you tomorrow?
Well, my message to them is that we are expecting all Ghanaians, all Africans, and not Africans alone, all the blacks, to be there tomorrow and to come and see the Amachi Dede Dino, who is now an Iron Boy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So evergreen Iron Boy.
That's it.
All right. Before I come to you, Stephen, let me come to you, Larry Wynn. What is your message to the people who will be coming to see you tomorrow?
Yeah. Also, Nana say about our fans in the whole Africa, the tomorrow peace, come to support our stars here, because of your people, or because of our fans. That's why we're here.
We're running out of time. Yo, briefly, the venue again, and then we have to go.
Okay, the venue is Kama DC. And the address is 2221 Adams Place, Northeast, Washington, D.C., with a zip code 20018.
All right.
So tomorrow at 10 p.m.
Thank you.
You don't
want
to miss it. Go grab your ticket. All it's going to be serious.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much. That was Daniel Amachi Dede, a popular Ghanaian highlife musician, joined by Lil Wayne as well as Stephen Ohene Ejepon. Nightline Africa comes to you on Saturdays and Sundays at 16 and 18 hours UTC from the English service of the Voice of America. And from the rest of the Nightline team, managing editor Shaka Sali, producer Douglas Impuga, and engineer for today, John Dryden, we say a big thank you for joining us tonight. And remember, as the elders say, it is only a stupid cow that rejoices at the prospect of being taken to a beautiful abattoir. I'm your host, Peter Clotte, in Washington. Good evening, Africa.